Hello and welcome to episode 326 of the Hooniverse podcast. I had to think there for a minute. I'm your host, Jeff Glucker. And joining me this week, Ron, I'm giving him the day off. Not the day off. He's doing his day job right now. And it's in the middle of the day and people like my guest and I have weird jobs. So we can do shit like this. Zach Krapman. what is up, Zach?
I'm leaving yeah. Right now.
I don't remember why. I think, did I like mail you a package that said that? Or I used that name once as a joke.
Well, did we go to second grade together?
I don't, it was many years ago, many, many moons ago. How have you been, my friend?
I've been really good. Really good. Doing a little traveling, doing a lot of driving, testing some new stuff, old stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It's awesome that you've kind of stepped in as I don't want to say the number two on Smoking Tire, but it's you're kind of like, you know, you're doing a lot of reviews with Matt, and it's pretty awesome to see you guys there doing it neck and neck, so to speak.
Yeah, no, I recognize that my place is co-host. I mean, he is the trunk of the tree because he's doing it for a long time, but it's something we talked about for a bit. And when I was able to move and work for TST full time, like moved to working for TST, not physically move where I lived. We started doing it and the fans and the viewers seem to like it a lot. So, all right, let's keep doing it. It's really fun.
Yeah, it's been great. And the podcast studio has been probably pretty wonderful too with the software since it's more, that podcast has evolved over the years from that one table in the house in
Playa.
That I was at a Porsche event a month or two ago, and Patrick Long was there, and he's like, remember the podcast house? And like, people would get high there. I'm like, yeah, I remember that place very well.
It's funny to look back at the guests we got in the early days who would walk into a house, because like, this was 2011, podcasting was really new. I mean, we had Pat Long, we had the director of Senna, we had Jesse Combs, we had
Steve Dinan, Dan Neal.
Like, we had people that, you know, if you see their name on there, you're like, wow, that's a great get. And some of them waited until we got a different location to come back, and some of them came back frequently. But it was funny. I think it really highlights that you don't really need a fancy studio.
Yes.
And you can kind of start however you need to start. But yeah, that was a fun time.
Are you saying this is not a fancy studio right here?
Well, I mean, the way to spin that is you are surrounded by expensive equipment.
Where is it? I don't see it.
Well, you have your foreign automobile, and then you have, is that a Peloton?
It is actually a Peloton.
Yeah. Do you own a bicycle?
Yes.
It doesn't rain here. I don't understand it.
When I first got the Peloton, it was angled in a way where I would look at my bike where it sits in the garage. I'm like, I can ride my fake bike to look at my real bike. The Peloton has made me a better mountain biker, though. I firmly believe that. I feel better on climbs and all that stuff.
Okay.
But I've also been doing not just biking on it. You can do these like bicycle boot camps where you get off the bike and actually do weights and shit. Yeah.
Okay.
That's cool. That I've been enjoying those. So your podcast, you're in Matt's podcast, has come a long way. How has the change to, and you've been doing it for a while now on with the iPhone setup, that seems like a pretty awesome setup for especially your part of the job?
Yeah, I mean, so what, so people don't know, you know, I've been the producer of the podcast for like 6 years after Chris Hayes, you know, went to do real work. And when we started doing video, we used to use Wirecast, and it was just a really complicated software, and it's a really high level software, but it can do way more than we need to do, and it requires a crazy machine. And so now we use something called SwitcherCast, which basically uses a network of iPhones that wirelessly transmit to an iPad. And the iPad works as like the director's tablet. And I can just switch cameras live while we record using some hotkeys. And so it's easier to set up. It's easier to troubleshoot, which there are rarely issues. And it's really lightweight. So, you know, we just did this show. We did a live show at the Audrey and Carr Museum in Rhode Island. And I was able to fly there with, you know, the iPad, two iPhones, a bunch of cables and a mixer. I mean, you know, it took a suitcase, but it was one suitcase. Like, we don't need to bring a tower computer with us. We just bring an iPad and these iPhones. So, yeah, man, it's really simple.
Does it record to the iPad?
It does both. So it records the iPad does a native recording of the live cut I'm making. And then each iPhone also records what it's filmed. So we have like a backup. And if we wanted to recut the show somehow with different angles, we could. We're not going to do that because of the amount of work involved.
Right.
But in one instance, we did have some sort of, I can't remember what happened with, like, there was like a failure on the iPad, one in 3 years, but I had to use those backups that were on the iPhones. And it's so great to have that, you know, having redundant safety nets is very good when you're not a trained engineer.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's such a good system. I wish there was something like I can't do that in this capacity because, you know, this is over a teleconferencing software, even though this is a podcast based software. But it'd be awesome, like, if I could just, like, ship people these iPhones. But, hey, mail them back when you're done because I got to ship that to someone else next for another episode.
Well, I mean, you can have people call in with SwitcherCast and they can use a phone. I think they can use a laptop. And then you can do the same thing. You can cut between the cameras. So there's a lot of – I mean, SwitcherCast is good. I used one with Spinelli once called, like, Recast that had great audio and was kind of like this. And he could drop in lower thirds and graphics and things.
That's cool.
And that it basically looked like they had white labeled Zoom.
Okay.
Based on the quality and some of the buttons and settings. So
interesting. Yeah, this has I can do sound things like this. Which as a lover of stand-up comedy, I think you'll appreciate.
Yeah.
It's so stupid. But you could add your own sounds if you wanted to. I've just never played with that functionality. That's really cool. So, how have you enjoyed the double takes? Is the idea behind that to present two opinions? It's just like, hey, we both have this car, we both think about cars differently.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's like that Venn diagram, right? So, how do I feel about cars? How does Matt feel about cars? Where do we agree and where do we differ? And there's also, you're kind of replicating the old one takes where you would drive a car with an owner of a car. You know, we used to have this series where we would drive someone's modified car with them in the car and you have a discussion. And so with the two takes, sometimes our opinions differ, sometimes they align. I do think we notice different things about cars, and it also just prompts this like natural discussion to happen while you're driving. So, you know, our videos are simple because that's what our budgets allow and the resources we have. So just talking for 18 minutes kind of to the camera is challenging. I mean, you've done on camera stuff. Like usually it's chopped down to 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. So I think it just promotes this kind of natural flow of back and forth. And yeah, and we notice different stuff. We like different stuff. Yeah. So I think the fans have really supported the two take format.
Now, are they supporting the mustache? How long are we?
Strangely, yes. So I grew this mustache. We got invited to the Audrain Museum to drive in their veteran run, which is like a rally for cars from 1900 to 1909. And we went out and drove a 1902 Packard that was fraught with issues. But we were like, all right, we're going to dress period correct. We got costumes. It was awesome. You can see it on my Instagram or Matt's Instagram. And I went, all right, a month out, I'll start growing a mustache because I kind of had an idea for what I wanted to look like if I was back in the early 1900s. There are some crazy mustaches in the early 1900s, and I can't grow 9 out of 10 of them. There's some bushy stuff out there. So, yeah, I just did this, and it worked really well for the clothes I bought, and my girlfriend liked it. And then I came home, and I was busy, and I was traveling, and I've been, like, rocking it for 2 weeks, and I'm getting compliments from friends that are sarcastic and supportive, and then also just genuine compliments from people.
Wow.
I have never thought of myself as a mustache person.
Right.
So I don't really know how long it will last, but right now I'm just like, all right, I don't have to worry about shaving it right now. And
right.
If I can get this part out, and then I can become a barista, and then I will become that which I hate.
Yes. Nice. That was funny. Have you been to Rhode Island before?
No, I had never been there before. A lot of that. There's a lot of that out there, Jeff. There's a lot of that out there.
Yeah, I went to college.
Try to turn the accent off.
From Newport.
You did?
Yeah, I went to University of Rhode Island, so I know. My wife and I's first date was at a restaurant in Newport, so I know Newport. Yeah.
Wow, was it called like Chowder and Chowder or something like that?
No, I think it had a lobster or something in the title, or Rooster. I don't remember. I know the location. I can't think of the name. I could Google it, but I don't want to.
Yeah.
That museum is pretty cool too. I've been there once, and it's a, you know, small, but what they pack in there is really interesting and nicely presented.
Yeah. I mean, they have a cachet around town of like 400 cars, and the museum itself, I think there were 7 cars in there when we went. I mean, it basically looks like the size of an Abercrombie store if it was in Newport. But when we went, there was a 918, a McLaren F1, an Enzo, a Bugatti Chiron. There were like, I mean, it was a supercar exhibit, and they had the heaviest of hitters.
Right.
So it was cool. And the stuff that I got to see, one of their storage facilities, and they have a really eclectic mix of, you know, good performance cars, a cup car, some hot rods, some kind of hot rods that look like they were built in the early 2000s, you know, like the,
oh, yeah.
Like yep. The wheels are a little, for me, the wheels are a little too big. The tires are a little too small,
right.
But like there's some angry stuff. And then they have these cars like early 1900s, which are pretty interesting.
That's so awesome.
I don't know how often they rotate it, but that's what,
yeah, that's what they do. That's cool to know. I didn't know they had the whole like cachet or the cars stowed away. That's pretty neat. When I went there, it was cars on loan. They were all like those 50s GM concept cars. Like, this one's going to have nuclear power, like stuff like that.
Yeah.
we're doing fission.
They were cool. Those Firebird concepts, right? From like the 50s that.
Yeah.
One of them had a roof that was like 10 feet high, like above the dashboard, and it had no windshield. It was one of the most interesting concepts I've ever seen. It was like an awning. It kind of had an awning instead of a roof. It's very strange. You know, it never go into production, but it definitely wowed the audience when it rolled out.
Huh. Interesting. I'm going to jump over to Twitter where we have some questions. And I already saw one that made me laugh because it's from someone we both know. But let me close that window. Okay. So first one is from Oliver Picard at the Ollie Picard. If you were going to design your own car from scratch, what would it look like and what would power it?
Oh man, that is tough. Well, what it would look like is challenging because I'm not going to freehand describe it right now. So it would just have bits and pieces of things. I think the engine is a simpler solution. I think I would just go with an NA V12. I'd be torn between like a really good V8, like the Hunicorn, or a V12. But I think ultimately a V12 is like, you can just listen to it at any RPM all the time, makes plenty of torque, plenty of power. I don't care which, like the 812 GTS has an amazing engine. That's fine. The 575 Maranello had a great engine. That, like any of the, or the, you know, the Vantage V12S. Sure, any of those. So V12 has to be manual, of course. I'm going to go 6-speed. What it would look like?
How about this? What style of car would it be? Would it be a coupe?
Yeah, definitely be a coupe. And I think it would be front engine. I just really like the dynamics of a front engine rear wheel drive car. Probably something like from the 60s where you know, curves were there, A pillars were small. I don't know if it would I think the Shelby Daytona Coupe is one of the coolest looking cars in the world ever, like, especially like totally the rear of it. So it'd probably be something like that with a little bit of alpha thrown in.
Okay.
Like, you know,
like a Bertone designed Daytona Coupe.
Right.
With an NAV12, I think you're onto something.
Yeah.
Or like Zagato or something.
Yeah. Or I could just take the Alpha 8C and put a V12 and a manual in it and be done. Because that, I think, is one of the prettiest things ever made.
There you go. That's a good one. That dude Pasha asks, any plans for more MF racing events? I don't know what that means.
MF racing events. Matt Farah racing events?
I don't know.
I don't think we've ever had a Matt Farah racing event.
Fucking racing events?
I love doing racing, like Lemons Racing, stuff like that. And Matt's probably going to get to go racing with Tom Seger and Bert Kreischer at some point when those guys have a free schedule. So I don't know if we're going to do anything outside of that because we need a car and racing.
Time and money.
Time and money. Time and money.
Francois at Francois VDSP. Most underrated car you've driven or owned? That's a good question.
Ooh. The most underrated. I drove a Sentra SER like the boxy one. And it was from the year where it was a independent suspension, like double wishbone all around. Same as the Infiniti G20, I think it was.
I think so, yeah.
And it like it kind of blows minds because the Sentra looks, it's like a box, you know, it's a 90s box. Looks really dull, and they had different suspension the years previous and afterwards. But if you get that one in the sweet spot, and if it's modified right, and this was pretty simple, I mean, it is like one of the better front wheel drive handling experiences you can have. So it's everyone talks about the Fiesta ST, or you know, that's like the, I feel like that's the front wheel drive legend kind of the last 10 years.
Right.
So this would, they would share a beer together. You know, they are they are both great front wheel drive cars.
Right.
And that stuff just kind of wows you because I think in the 90s, I was just too focused on rear wheel drive and power.
Sure.
And kind of, I was really poo-pooing the front wheel drive stuff. And I was totally wrong.
That's why I've heard O'Neill Rally School in New Hampshire is like an eye-opening rally school because I believe they start you out on front wheel drive Focus or Fiestas. And you learn, you know, throttle off oversteer in front wheel drive hatches, and it stuff clicks for a lot of people is what I've heard. I think Bill Caswell has, you know, lots of very good things to say about O'Neill. I think the most underrated car for me might be the Mazda 2. I think that was just an absolutely amazing driving experience in such a nothing car. Like it just, it was like a shitty Miata hatchback, but in all the best ways. I really, really like that car.
Yeah. And they had a spec series for a while too. And they used them for rally. Yeah.
Yeah. They were B-spec car. Yeah. With the Honda Fits, which is also a great car to drive. Now here's a question from Hannah Stein at Hannah Stein 63. Who do you like better, Matt or Hannah?
That's Matt's wife for anyone who's asking. My livelihood requires me to say I like Matt Farah more, but if I don't say Hannah, she'll never let me in their house again.
Right.
So I think I will take a cue from R. Kelly and I will plead the fifth.
I was going to say pick one of the cats. excuse me. Peter Nelson at 16V Pete, how did you get your start in your automotive career and what were you doing before?
I just started doing it. I was a waiter. I moved out to LA in 2009, waiting tables, but I just wanted to work in TV and cars. Like it was, my idea was that general. And I literally found a job listing on Craigslist that was like car blogger needed for a new website. Yeah, really strange. Went and met the guy for coffee, didn't get murdered. I left with my lower orifice intact. And so I blogged for him for a little bit. And then TST, I was following Matt. TST got created. They looked for writers. I sent them a sample from the site. They liked it, started writing for TST. And then they were like, hey, we're going to do video. Do you want to help? And I just said, yes. So I think it was just, I wanted to do it and I found a way to do it and then just, you know, kept walking forward basically.
Sure. Sure. That's awesome. Dante Casale at Casale underscore Dante. What professional or personal attributes do you think you and Matt bring to TST as a sustainable business? That's a kind of a tough question.
Say that again.
Yeah. What professional or personal attributes do you think you and Matt bring to TST as a sustainable business? I mean, I think my answer for you would be your personalities and then the ability to get your work done.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I guess it's been a sustainable business for 8 years. I mean, it was, you know, there were lean years for sure when we were first starting out with YouTube and YouTube rev share was low, but I mean, it's been cash positive for a really long time. So it's basically sustainable at this point. I mean, we both have salaries. We both have performance incentives. Like the thing makes money, we sell ads and yeah, it's all rooted in us. So like, as long as we keep doing the thing, you know, and theoretically, unless the whole internet gets turned off, like it will be a sustainable business. So it's like you said, like our interest in cars, our personalities, our ability, I think, to explain things, and our ability to get the work done, because a lot of this, people think it's very glamorous and you're just driving cars, but there is a lot of work before and after that stuff happens.
Yeah.
To keep it going.
Yep. The actual car driving part is over in a flash. Someone asked if you're related to Hal Sparks, which is kind of funny.
Oh, that is funny. I'm not. We have the same hair.
Jay Pasillo at JZX71. What background do you have for producing a podcast, or are you self-taught?
Self-taught. So, yeah, self-taught.
Yeah, that's kind of how, like, I feel like almost everybody, except now you have professional radio engineers being like, all right, we're going to get into this game. And everybody else who had a podcast for the last year is like, okay, record and go.
Yeah, I mean, the number of big podcasts that I listen to that are produced by the hosts is not small. Like The Dollop, I think until very recently, mm-hmm. was just done by Dave and Gareth. Like, and this right. is one of the biggest comedy podcasts. And they recorded it themselves in a room. They hit the record button. And now I think they have a producer to help them out with stuff. But the thing is, the technology and hardware has gotten easier and simpler. Like, there are companies are finally making gear for podcasting. So when mm-hmm. we started this, the problem was there wasn't. So that's why it was great to have Chris, because he understood computers and everything. And, you know, he had to like write the code to host the audio shows and kind of like cobble together existing audio gear from Guitar Center to mm-hmm. go into a computer. But nowadays there are mixers that are meant for podcasting. They have a USB out that goes in your computer. There's plenty of software you can download, and the internet and YouTube is filled with DIY instructions on how to record, mix, you know, audio, post-processing, like everything. So mm-hmm. you can be self-taught in like a couple of hours by using the internet.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Totally agree with that. Still to this day, I learn editing stuff constantly for video. Like, oh, I didn't know I could do that in Premiere. That's cool.
Yeah.
Ben asks, how do you maintain your youthful glow?
I try to get pregnant as often as possible.
Nice.
Yeah.
This is an interesting question from Lucas Tardis at Retrofit. What's it like listening to rich guys prattle on about cars, watches, and excessive disposable income 2 days a week? Genuinely want to know. I couldn't take it.
That is a very interesting question. Well, I think our guests are much more mixed in their income and tax brackets than that question implies. So,
yes.
You know, we have sure. people on that have no money and people that have lots of money, and they have much more interesting stories than just that stuff. But I mean, look, there are people that are in every tax bracket in the car world. I mean, the car world, what's hard about the car world is I feel like there has been more attention directed at high dollar stuff on because of social media.
Sure.
Because like when we were kids, you get a magazine and if there was a Lamborghini in it, you were so excited to see a photo of that because they're so rare.
Right.
And now there are more rich people than ever. There are more supercar brands than ever, and they're putting out more cars than ever. You know, there's mm-hmm. the production numbers of Lamborghini are what, 10 times higher than they were 20 years ago, maybe
right.
50 times higher. So it's kind of like, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. I feel like right now the really big expensive flowers kind of get the attention. But the car world is full of people that make very little money and have built or drive awesome cars. One of my favorite one takes is I drove a guy's Honda Civic, like 96 Civic, that had basic suspension mods on it. He bought it for $3,400, and it was an amazing driving experience. Like,
I bet.
The cornering was perfect. The damping was perfect. I was like, if you were going to sell this, I'd buy it from you. And I don't say right. that, like, I can't afford to say that to someone who owns a Porsche. But, like,
right.
I mean, I've just driven such a weird spread of stuff. So what I do with the people that have more money than I do is – I think what's important is if their interest is genuine, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So if they're into the driving, if they're really knowledgeable about their cars, I can't fault them for being successful in life and then wanting sure. to use that money, because that's what if I had that money, I would build this, you know, special Alpha 8 CV12 that we talked about earlier. You know,
right.
we would all want to make our dreams real if we had the money to do it. So that's yeah. what I try to think about.
I think that's a pretty damn good answer. That's a really good answer. One more question from Twitter from Dan Mosqueda. Zach, did you find an Android deck for your M3?
Yeah, I got a, what's the company? The company's called like Avio. There's a couple of different companies that make decks that look like the OEM deck for E46s, but they have
Android
backend. And I got this one, which is their fourth generation. And from what I've read online, it's the best generation. The first three were pretty clunky as they were developing it. But I've got Apple CarPlay. Google Maps pops up in there. I mean, it can have Bluetooth calling and all these other things. And it takes like 15 seconds to power up. But it looks OEM. The touchscreen's great. The sound is great. I'm so happy that I put it in. And I regret having it sat in my closet for over a year. And I was like, oh, I'll get to that soon. It's going to be so much work. And then when I finally did it, I was like, what have I been doing?
Right. That's how it goes on these things sometimes. Some Instagram questions for you. This one was kind of answered already. Kyle Noenick asks, how did you get connected to the Smoking Tire?
Through the internet, like literally just cold email kind of thing.
Yep. Daniel Robert DeRue asks, what other cars are also like sandwiches? M2 equals club, 911 equals BLT. Keep up the good work. Is this something you guys did on TST?
So we just drove the Infiniti Q60, and it's my analogy was it was kind of like a gas station sandwich where, you know, in the early days of traveling, if you were just needed a sandwich and you stop at your local filling station, like that sandwich was great. The problem now is that there are other sandwich options in the world. And the Q60, I think when it came out, was a great GT car. It was pretty. It has this round muscular shape, while everything else these days is like these hard edges. But the car we drove was like $65,000. It's got a slow transmission. The interior has basically been the same since it was built. It's on the same architecture as the first G35. It's just asking too much, because if you look to your right, there is the BMW M240 xDrive that outperforms it in every way, looks newer, has a more interesting interior, and is actually less expensive. So that's the better sandwich, you know?
Yes, I totally agree. It's a great engine in want of a brand new chassis, and get rid of, like, I still can't believe they have like the one screen that the display looks awesome, and then the other screen that looks like it's 15 years old. It's
Honda wild. Has the same problem with the NSX. You're like, when was this screen made? Like, what shelf covered in dust did you find this on?
Yes. 92 Dakota HD. Any hero like figures in the car world that you want to meet?
Ooh. I would like to meet Robbie Gordon, because he's driven in so many disciplines and won in so many disciplines.
Probably one of a handful of people who say that. No offense to Robbie Gordon.
I mean, I don't know him personally. I've
heard stories. Driving.
I would say, okay, a similar example would be Mario Andretti, who I have heard is nothing but a lovely person and has also raced in a number of disciplines and won so many of them. So I think people that have multidisciplinary success is such an impressive thing and pretty rare these days in terms of driving. And
I would really like to have a couple beers with the original Top Gear trio.
Of course. Yeah, that would be quite a riot.
I think they're the ones who made me want to make car videos, which a lot of people could, you know, make the same claim. But they also seem like, especially James, seems like they'd just be delightful to sit there and just talk about, even if you weren't even talking about cars, you know, like talk about Clarkson's Farm, which how the hell do you turn a farm into amazing television? Like the last episode was perfect.
Yeah.
May can build a toy train. Everybody's like, this is riveting. You know, so yeah.
I completely agree.
Yeah. This is a question which I don't know if you're going to answer it. Taylor 356, what's the fastest you've ever driven, allegedly?
I went 187 in a Cadillac CTS-V on a dry lake bed, and that's the fastest I've ever gone. So
yeah. Mine is 178, and I'm not going to say where, because it wasn't a dry lake bed. Don't speed, kid. Wink. The Keckles, I think this is. Zach, are you going to pick up a GR Corolla?
No, like it's just not a financially smart decision for me.
Unless you can flip it for 15 on top or something.
I mean, that's true. Like if I could go walk in a dealership and be like, hey, I'm so-and-so, give me an early allocation and then flip it, which I probably could. And if I was smarter, I would try to do that. But it's just, I had a car payment when I had an STI, and I haven't had one. I was in 07 and I haven't had one since. And I really like not having that pressure every month.
Yep.
But they're awesome. I will buy one on the used market, I'm sure.
There you go. Jacob Leva asks, what's a car so good you can't help but have some disdain for it?
Anything Porsche makes.
Yes, that's a great answer. Yes, yeah. Because
they are. I think they're like the varsity football star who's also smart, who's also nice, who also does charity. Like, I disliked them when I used to work kind of for them because everyone was so. It was like I hated that band because everyone liked the band. And then as I've driven more and more and more of their cars, I'm like, yep, these are as good as everybody says. And that annoys me for some reason.
100% in the same boat. I've never been one of these like, oh, these cars are the best. You got to have a Porsche. Cars are the best. And then every time you drive one, you're like, fuck, these are the best. These are the best cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just had the GTS Targa and I was like, this is like dream shit right now. I want this car. Crazer TV asks, have you ever been scared being Matt's passenger?
No. Matt is a really good driver and he's also conservative in relation to his ability, and he's pretty risk averse. Like I am a riskier person than he is, you know, in most areas. So I know
as we've all heard from the which you've retold again recently, the motorcycle story.
Yeah, the motorcycle thing, or like jumping off bridges into water or snowboarding, I don't know, just stuff like that. Like I seek adrenaline a little bit more than he does, and knowing that and having known him for so long, like he's a very good driver. And he drives quickly, but he's always like well within the boundaries of what's possible in his ability.
Right. My not to rehash that story, but my favorite part was how your friends were pissed that the fireworks had to pause to let the helicopter fly through. That's the best part of the story. This is the last question from Instagram. It's Malkionix. Who is more likely to have a tell-all book, Matt about Zach or Zach about Matt? And what are the titles?
I think it'd be more likely if I did a tell-all about Matt, because I think he has a more interesting story, you know, like, but, you know, like, I don't know, mine would be short. It'd be like, Zach owned a Miata, and then a Crown Vic,
BMW,
and then he got a BMW and kept it forever, you know.
Then there's a long chapter about a mustache period.
Right. But what's interesting about that question is both of us, our lives are incredibly public and we talk about them on the podcast twice a week. So it's kind of like, I don't really know what would be left out to put in a book.
Page one, go to episode one of the podcast.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I don't know what the titles would be.
What are you guys up to episode count wise now?
We just recorded 719.
Jesus Christ. That's so many.
It's a lot. Yeah.
So many.
We have to plan something for the 1,000th. Because we're not good at planning anniversaries whenever they
right, come up on right. the hundreds. Yeah, no, I did a couple of things. I did 100, 200, then 300 was when we paused it. So yeah, you should definitely do something for 1,000. That would be sweet. Like
yeah,
it's host an event at the car storage or something like that. That'd be cool. That would be a lot of fun. So what's coming up for you? Anything good car wise on the horizon that you're looking forward to that you can talk about?
Well, I'm going to the Range Rover launch, which will be probably very comfortable. And I'm driving the Porsche GT4 RS this weekend with Matt, which I'm sure will live up to the hype that everybody is singing from the rooftops.
Right.
And I think on the other side, something I just did this last weekend, I went to Tennessee to hang out with Sam Smith, Zach Bowman, and Kyle Kinnard of Road and Track tenure. And we drove old shit boxes and went camping. And like had no cell service for 2 days. And I can't recommend that highly enough to anybody that has.
I was jealous of that trip.
It was great. So, you know, if you're out there, like, doesn't matter if you have a shit box or a regular car, but just like a driving vacation with camping where you're just kind of checked out from the rest of the world for 2 days is really good.
How was Zach's Mustang? Because I love the look of his Mustang.
Dude, it is awesome. I mean, it's not perfect, but it is awesome. Like it looks like it will hit you in the face.
Yes.
It's black, which was painted crudely over red. It has black Krager wheels and big fat tires. He chopped the springs a little bit. It's got a 5-speed, really basic 302 from like a 94 LTD. So it's not really fast, but it sounds right. It looks tough. You are the prince of Maryville, Tennessee when you drive around. You get so many compliments because, I mean, that is like the chariot of Atlanta. And the handling is surprisingly good. Like corners pretty flat. He was running away from modern sports cars to the point where he pulled over at some point and a guy in an FRS pulls up and he's like, dude, that thing's amazing. And he asked, he was like, oh, I really want to get one, but they're just so expensive. And Zach said, well, I've got like 10 grand in. And I guess the guy's jaw dropped and he was like, I paid 30 for this. And he, you know, for his BRZ. And he was so mad that he could have had this amazing thing for less.
Hell yeah.
Manual brakes, which are seem too firm, like it's over boosted or something. But otherwise, okay. It's just, dude, it's great. I mean, I had a muscle car in high school, and so I just immediately turned into 16-year-old Zach, and I started laughing and just, you know, blasting noise through the trees. It's so good.
Ever since he's picked that up, I've been thinking, like, I need to dump this fucking Jag and get, like, it's tough out here. Prices suck even for, like Dodge Darts were never expensive. And I was like, maybe I'll pick up a Dart. Even Darts are, like, dumb right now. But that old Mustang, man, something about that. Because I've always been more of a Ford guy. So when he picked up that car, I was like, that is perfect for Bowman. And that's just perfect in general. I loved it. So it's good to hear that it lives up.
He was able to put all the camping gear for the whole group except my duffel bag was in his car. Like a huge Yeti cooler, a 20-liter like army water container, a stove, tents for everybody. He has these packing boxes from his time living, you know, on the road for a year, and right. That put that in the back seat. And like that's on big awesome. Turns, it would scrape a little bit, but I didn't realize how big the trunk was in that car, and it still weighs 2,700 pounds. You know.
Yep. That's awesome. So, fuck, I need to find an old Mustang.
I think the key is to look for coupes, not fastbacks.
Right, not fastbacks. Yep, that's absolutely the trick there. Okay, well, that's all good stuff, Zach. I'm glad we had a moment to catch up. I appreciate you taking some time out of your day. I know you got some other stuff going on today. I just wanted to do a nice, easy episode since I'm going on vacation next week. Looking forward to that. Not that you give two shits. thanks for coming on, and we'll have to do this again real soon. We'll get Ron, my co-host, in here as well. We'll make it a full party. And we'll go from there. And we both want to come up and do TST soon. I think it's overdue for a visit up your way.
We'll talk about that soon.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it, man. I'm going to stop recording.